Hey there, Weber podcast listeners. I'm Connor Cyrus, one of the hosts of Vermont Edition, and I wanted to let you know that this podcast has been edited to make it a little bit shorter and a little bit sweeter so you only have the good stuff. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Connor Cyrus. According to Donate Life New England, an organization that helps coordinate organ and tissue donations in New England, more than 106,000 men, women, and children in the United States are waiting for a life-saving organ transplant. And more than 5,000 of those people live in New England. According to New England Donor Services, 57% of Vermonters are registered organ donors through their driver's license. It's the highest in the country. But what does it mean to have that little heart on your driver's license? Today on the show, we're going to explore what organ donations look like in Vermont and across the region, how it's changed since the beginning of the pandemic, and some of the tough conversations that happened before, during, and after transplants, both from the recipients and the families of donors. Now, to help us get through some of these tough conversations, and to hear it give a better understanding of what transplants and organ donations look like, I want to welcome Jennifer DeMaroney, registered nurse and organ donation coordinator at UVM Medical Center. Jennifer, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Thank you, Connor, for having me and allowing us to discuss this very important issue.
I want to start with what, if you could just describe your job and what you do on a daily basis.
My job varies day to day, but overall what I do is I educate the community and hospital staff members about donation-related issues. I do evaluations of potential donors to see if they're able to be organ donors, and if so, I talk to the donor families about donation, continue to support them throughout the donation process while organs are allocated and we find the homes for them, and then really stay in touch with them and continue to offer the level of support that they need.
And, you know, I think a lot of people, at least myself, is curious how your job has changed since the beginning of the pandemic and what you've seen change in terms of organ donation since the beginning.
Well, in the beginning of the pandemic, we really just didn't know very much about COVID-19. And so it was really kind of a scary place to be in the medical field. We didn't know if we could even have organ donors that had COVID. And we were finding more and more people testing positive for COVID that would have been potentials, but we ended up ruling them out in the beginning because we just didn't have a lot of information. Now I'm happy to say that COVID is not a rule out for organ donation. And so if you do test positive for COVID-19 while you're admitted to the hospital, we do not immediately decline the donation. We found that COVID is probably here to stay. And because of that, just like everything in medical, we've kind of adapted and have realized that recipients do fine with COVID positive organs. So, but in the beginning, we really saw that there was a shift towards transplant programs not doing as many transplants as well, because they needed the resources to take care of patients with COVID. And they also were worried about whether or not those organs would be suitable for their recipients.
And it's my understanding that last year we saw the most number of organ donors. What do you think changed from previous years?
We did see the most number. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that since it is a medical profession and it's always adapting and changing, I think patients that we would have thought weren't candidates for organ donation were finding that they actually are able to be organ donors and that the recipients do well. So we really expanded our pool of potential donors. As you mentioned before, Vermonters have a very high rate of first person registrations saying that they want to be organ donors. And so I don't think it was necessarily a shift towards more people wanting to donate. I think the opportunity to donate became available for more people. And that's how we saw more donors overall last year.
And there are four different types of organ donation. There's living donation, deceased donation, tissue donation, and pediatric donation. Will you walk us through what the different kinds of donations are and how they're used differently?
Yes. Well, living donation would be when you donated to somebody while you were still alive. And that can be to somebody that you know, like a living related donation, or it could be somebody that you didn't know, which is a living unrelated donation. At UVM Medical Center, we do have those donations. And if anyone has any questions about that, I can certainly reference the phone number 802-847-4774, which is the renal transplant program at UVM.
And listeners, we will put that up on our website after the show. So you don't feel the need to memorize that number.
That's good. Most of us have two kidneys. That's how most of us are born. It would be an anatomical abnormality if you only had one. And we need one to actually function. So our kidneys can filter appropriately with just one, assuming that we are healthy, in good shape, and we don't ourselves have kidney problems.
Listeners, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, in order to be a live kidney donor, you're going to have to be in really good shape, because what we're doing is having you have a surgical procedure to save the life of somebody else, but not one that's really benefiting you. So we would want to be very careful about the safety to the donor and not have any outcomes that negatively affected them.
Listeners, this hour we're speaking with Jennifer DeMaroni. She's a registered nurse and organ donation coordinator at UVM Medical Center. We also want to hear from you. Did you receive a transplant that changed your life? Are you one of the 5,000 New Englanders waiting for a transplant? Or maybe you've witnessed somebody go through this and you would like to share that experience with us. I want to go to the phones. You can reach us at 1-800-639-2211 and talk to Athena in Brattleboro. Athena, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Thank you. I am a liver transplant person. In the summer of 2019, when I had just turned 60, I was diagnosed with stage liver disease, which was caused by an undiagnosed autoimmune disease. And then COVID hit in February. And so my life was already turned around and then really got turned around with that. Fortunately, I was able to work at home. My employer was very supportive, but being a really extrovert kind of person, isolation was very, very difficult. And the Brattleboro Co-op was wonderful, though, because the only place I ever went was to do shopping at that time. So that's what I got to do, because they did curbside service very well. And Vermonters really were great, because they all wore masks, and all my friends who came visited me did wear a mask and all of that. Getting to see a doctor was hard because of COVID, obviously. But I have to say Dartmouth really got together, and by spring I was able to go back to my doctor visits and do those remotely or in person. So that was helpful.
Athena, can you tell us about your transplant?
Sure. So I got sicker and sicker, and then the transplant hospitals had to go all into COVID action. But by July, I was desperately in need of a liver. And so I resigned to half-time employment, my job. And then the transplant team at Lahey Hospital actually opened up more, because they had been transplants had been delayed. And so I got to go through the interview process. All transplant patients or people in need of an organ need to go through a interview process to make sure that they are healthy enough to withstand the surgery, undergo the surgery, and to recover, and then also have a support team in place and that sort of thing. So I was evaluated partly through remote phone calls, and then at the hospital. And then by mid-August, so all that happened in early August when I got on the list and got evaluated. And then on mid-August, I had been in the hospital a bunch and was coming home from Lahey, and I got the call for the transplant.
And how has that transplant changed your life?
I was coming home from Lahey, and my friend was driving me, and we turned right around, and we were both crying, and it was just, sorry, it's still emotional. but it was a great, it was an amazing experience. So I got, I was in the hospital overnight and we had to do more interviews and such and get me ready for the surgery. So, and then I went into the surgery and I spent a month and a half in the hospital.
Athena, I don't mean to cut you off, but we really appreciate you calling. We're so happy that that your transplant was successful and that you seem to be doing well. Now, Jennifer, I want to get to you. And you talked about part of your job is to bring awareness to transplant organ donation. What is it that people need to know when it comes to organ donation and transplants?
I think the most important thing is when you make a choice, if you'd like to be a donor, that you should talk to your family and share your wish with them. We have conversations in the hospital with families and inform them that their loved one registered to be a donor and it's a surprise to them. I would ask that if you're going to register for donation, that you talk to your family, explain to them why this was your decision. It might be because you know somebody that needs an organ or somebody that had an organ transplant, or it might just be because you want to help others when you pass. Share with them the reasons so that it's not a huge surprise when we are in the ICU and we have that short time period in order to preserve the opportunity for organ donation. So I would say, please, please share that decision with your family.
And what do those conversations look like for you? I mean, I imagine these are very intense times for the families, and you have the job to go into the room and tell their family what the potential organ donor's wishes were. Can you just walk us through what those look like and how you approach them?
Yes. So I work with deceased organ donation. You had kind of touched upon the different types of donation. And so it's deceased organ donors that I work with. So every one of my organ donors has died. And so the discussion that we're having with a family is when they have just found out that their loved one has either died or is going to die. And as you can imagine, that's just a horrible time for them. And so having to have this discussion about what would your loved one want to do can be very difficult. Registration and making that choice yourself will help make that decision easier for families. Hospitals all across the country have certain criteria that when a patient meets this criteria, you notify the organ donation center. At that point, we actually access these registries. So one of the common misconceptions that people have is that if they register to be an organ donor, you know, the EMTs or the doctors will find this out and won't try as hard to save your life. I can assure you that that's not true. My background is in EMS. We never once saw a driver's license or even considered organ donation. But I can also tell you that nobody in this state other than myself and my colleague, we're the only two Vermonters that are able to access donation information.
And at what point do you access that information? Is it after the doctors have established? I mean, I think this might help give our listeners who find this misconception to be true some comfort knowing at what point of their treatment or lack thereof are you notified?
So as soon as the patient meets their clinical triggers in terms to be referred to organ donation, and those clinical triggers really are the ones that mean that you are not going to survive. These are not cases in which patients recover and do well. These are patients that are going to pass. At that point, when they're referred, we check the registry to determine if somebody's registered, but that information is not shared with the care team. In fact, often the family is the first one that we're sharing that information with because we're two separate organizations to some degree. We've got the care team that's trying so hard to save your life. And then, unfortunately, if they're unsuccessful, then donation might happen. It's a postmortem or after you die option.
Now, one of the things they do at UVM is called an honor walk. An honor walk is a way for the hospital and hospital staff to show respect to a patient at the end of life who is donating an organ to others. Listen to a video the UVM Medical Center put together of an honor walk from back in 2018.
Here at UVM Medical Center, we had our first honor walk, which is when all staff is invited to line the halls as we escort an organ donor from the ICU to the operating room. It was extremely moving to see everyone come together and as an organization support our donor and her family as they went to the operating room. It was hard to not cry as we walked down the halls to the operating room where she was going to save lives. This woman had registered to be an organ donor when she had gone to the Department of Motor Vehicles. So her wish was that if anything ever happened to her, that she be an organ donor. A selfless gift. She offered no limitations. Anything that she could give that would help people, she was willing to do. Her family knew and was not surprised with this decision. They said she was an amazing, selfless, generous person who, after you met, you would feel better about yourself and have a good day. She gave the best hugs, and she had a big heart. And this, in line with her when she was alive, after death, as an organ donor, she is going to save people. To see this and institute this honor walk, which I hope we continue with every one of our donors if the family would like to. It was incredible. It was just seeing everyone here come together and just as honoring and as a tribute to this woman and her family.
That was an honor walk from back in 2018 of Elizabeth Libby Hansel D. Avignon. I'm sorry for butchering that name earlier. Jennifer, how do families and patients respond right before an honor walk?
Well, as you heard, or if you choose to watch it, you can see on Libby Davignon's first honor
Davignon.
Walk.
Davignon, okay.
Davignon. It's one of the most amazing things that I have ever witnessed in my life. We do at UVM continue to hold them. We offer them to every single donor family. And I think what we found is for families that choose to participate, this is just part of the pride that they feel for their loved one who's going to be an organ donor. They want to celebrate this gift. And hospital staff also love to be able to come. We get to go and we get to support these families and we get to honor the organ donor. We see patients that are waiting for transplants. We see patients post-transplant. We see the whole range of people. And so to be able to come out and just say thank you and hopefully provide some level of support to that donor family. I mean, there's nothing better than being able to participate in one and just get that sense of just solemn, amazing kind of altruism that radiates from an organ donor.
Let's go to Margaret and Hardwick. Margaret, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Hello. My question has to do with my age and being a donor. And I know that in Vermont, we're one of the oldest states in the nation. So we have a lot of elderly people here. I'm 89 going on 90, but I'm in excellent health. I've never had any serious illness. I've had a few broken bones and a hysterectomy. But other than that, I've been in great health and never been a smoker and eat lots of vegetables, like they always say. So I'd like to know whether age by itself is a concern and perhaps what it is.
Jennifer, is age a concern?
That's a great question. Many people ask that. We do not consider age to be a rule out for organ donation. At this point, the oldest person that has been able to be an organ donor is 95. But that is could change today, and we could have 96 or 97. I would encourage anybody who wants to be an organ donor to sign up to be an organ donor. In reality, only 1% of us are going to be eligible to be organ donors when we die. We're going to look at past medical history. We're going to look at the admission course on why they came to the hospital. We're going to look at labs. We're going to do a lot of things to make that determination whether or not you can be an organ donor. But that's all stuff that we're going to be doing. If donation is important to you and it's something that you want to do, I would encourage you to sign up. Let us figure out if you're a candidate, if it ever happens. But signing up is important. That's what you can do.
Speaking of signing up, let's go to Peter in Montpelier, who I think has a question about registration. Peter, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Thank you so much for a really wonderful program. And that is the question, how to register. The reason I ask is that the license that I have, I thought included that, but it doesn't.
Jennifer.
Go
ahead.
So if you've registered at the DMV, what you will see on your license is a heart. If you do not have a heart, then it's actually very easy to register to be an organ donor. You can go to DonateLifeVermont.org and sign up. You can go to Donate Life America to donate or to register, and maybe VPR can share these links so that people can find them.
And speaking of which, the heart on the license that everybody receives that chooses to be an organ donor through the DMV, that is a legal document and has to be honored at the hospital. How does that help or hurt your communication with families after they pass?
Well, so the registration that you make at the DMV or through any of the online registrations, that is a legally binding document. So technically at the point that you have signed up, you are an organ donor. And that's information that we share with your family. One question that is quite often posed, and I'm just going to go out there and talk about it, is what if your family doesn't want you to be an organ donor, even though you have signed up? What happens then? And we get asked this all the time. I will tell you that in all the years that I've been doing this, if a family initially has some reservations or doesn't want their loved one to be an organ donor, often it's just because the knowledge that they have passed is really kind of made real by the discussion of organ donation. So, you know, what we do is we continue to support the family and kind of engage in a conversation about what type of person were they? Is this a decision that really is in line with choices that they would make? And we continue to support families. Ultimately, we want to make the right decision for the patient. We want to make the right decision for the family. So I think sometimes there's what legally can be done and what should be done. And on a case-by-case basis, we would make that determination. But again, if you can have this discussion with your family before you die so it isn't a surprise for them, then hopefully we can avoid any of those situations.
I want to go back to the phones and talk to Matthew in Essex Junction. Matthew, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Hi. Yeah, my question was about regenerative technologies and organs. So do we have technologies that can reconstitute either dead organs, you know, from a body that was just removed from, or organs currently? And I just wanted to cite three things like stem cells, lizards that can regrow their tails, like those sorts of things exist in the world. Do you have any insights on that?
I don't have a lot of insight into that. I do believe that with the 100,000 people that are waiting for organs right now and the 40,000 transplants that we did last year as a record year, we are going to have to come up with some new technology in order to save the lives of people with end-stage organ failure. And I know as technology increases, I am 100% sure that they are looking at ways to make organs, basically, to maybe be able to design organs that work as well as deceased organ donors.
so that we can save more people and hopefully get them off the transplant waiting list.
And let's go to Kathy and Barry. Kathy, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Hi, thanks. Well, 24 years ago, I was a live donor for my brother who was in desperate need of a kidney. He had kidney failure and had been on dialysis for about a year and a half. I was an excellent match with all six alleles matching. And, you know, I live in Vermont and he was in Florida. So they wanted to do the surgery where he was. So I went to Miami and underwent a number of tests to verify that I was in good health medically and then also psychologically, certainly passed all that and was very happy to say that 24 years later, the kidney I donated to my brother is still working strong for him. And it's perfectly fine for a person to live with one organ.
Thanks for that call, Kathy. Let's hear another organ donation experience. Let's go to Penny in East Burke.
Hi.
Hi. Welcome to Vermont Edition.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm just calling in because this is a perspective that people often don't get to hear. My 18-year-old daughter was killed in a car crash in Bradford, Vermont in 2011. And unfortunately, the nature of her crash, she landed in water. And so her organs themselves were not viable for donation. And she had just signed up to be an organ donor. She had just turned 18 in August and the crash happened in November. So we were fully aware that those were her wishes. But anyway, she was able to go on and to donate tissues, cornea, heart valve, and bone. So we're very proud of her. And what I can tell you is it's part of our healing process, knowing that she's living on in people who were out there and being able to enjoy their lives. And it's been very cathartic for my husband and myself.
Penny, thank you so much for that call. We really appreciate you sharing your experience. And Jennifer, I want to end with you because we just have a few minutes. We just have like less than a minute left. What does this cost people? Like, what should people? What kind of finances should people expect from all of these transplants?
So there is no cost to organ donation. It is a purely altruistic gift, and there should be no cost to the family in order to donate. In terms of transplants, that's going to be specific to the type of transplant that you need to get, your insurance. There's various different issues that would make it very difficult to determine what the cost would be for that.
We're going to have to leave the conversation there. To the callers that are still on the line, I'm sorry we weren't able to get to everybody. I want to thank my guest, Jennifer DeMaroni, who's an organ donation coordinator and registered nurse at UVM Medical Center. Jennifer, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.